Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
And that, of course, was the voice of our beloved founder, Brian Brown. He was the creator of the Brown Briefly, and he brought his very high standards of hosting an intelligent discussion of current events laced with humor and empathy. Brian's central concept was less is more, more or less, and he inevitably always brought more. And we're striving to keep that tradition going here on the Brown Briefly. Take a minute and introduce our crew here this morning. We got zooming in from his home above KVI Beach is our own globe-trotting guardian of the galaxy, historian extraordinaire, skipper of the Vachona, president of the Vachon Heritage Museum, which is currently under renovation. And it is Mr. Bruce Hallman. So since he's soon going to be departing for the Southern Hemisphere, I'll just have to say good day, mate.
Good day, Truman. How are you guys?
We're good. We're good. Yeah, I couldn't resist.
And all that good stuff.
Yeah, so how soon is it you're going again?
January 10th.
Oh,
so
man.
A couple more shows, and then I'm off for a while.
Off for the Southern Hemisphere, huh? Okay, also zooming in from his home here on Vachon above Burton is Kevin Jones, the skipper of the Opus. This is really a cool little commander troll. He's an intrepid cruiser to points north of Puget Sound and Johnstone Straits. Kevin is also the voice of Indivisible Vachon and the Vachon Climate Action Group. I'm not going to say that. Our indefatigable. Hey, I did it. Denver, a defender of democracy, who strives to create a livable planet overseen by a government we can appreciate or at least tolerate. Hello. How are you doing today, Kevin?
I'm doing well, and I know certain of those words are just tongue tires, so, you know, we go with what we got.
Well,
enjoy a beautiful sunny day above Burton here in the middle of Vachon.
You know, man, I tell you what, when I got in here this morning, it was a little cloudy. And it's just been getting better and better and better. And right now, I don't see a cloud in the sky. Wow, it's a beautiful day out there. Speaking of looking out the windows here of John, hello.
Gene Bosch. Brown John Virgin.
Yes. Now you really got me going. Gene Bosch Broadcast Studio. There we go. Downtown Vachon. Right next to me is my airplane partner, fellow treetop aficionado, arbitrator, mediator, two-time Fulbright scholar. I love this one. High-end women's shoe salesman and a tow truck repo man, Pinkerton guard of the first Boeing 747. Tort law professor. Washington State Assistant Attorney General, Craig Bellis.
I got one more for you.
Oh, no.
What? And it's actually one of my, I've never mentioned it, it was one of my favorite holiday experiences, and I'll tell it to you in about 5 seconds. Part-time Christmas tree salesman.
Really?
Yeah, I worked on a Christmas tree lot way back when I was in high school, and my favorite day was Christmas Eve when I was permitted to give trees away to people who could not afford trees.
How fun.
And they waited until Christmas Eve to bring... Their kids came in and their families and they go, how much can you sell that for? And I go, here, you can have it for free.
Oh, how cool is that?
Yeah.
Wow.
It was.
Good
it was a great
job.
Feeling.
Well, I am Truman O'Brien. I'm sitting here behind the big red switch at the Gene Bosch studio. And I'm attempting to do my best to keep these guys on track. And, you know, I should tell you about one of my former jobs that I had. When I was going to school in Billings.
You made Eastern license plates.
No, that was later.
Okay.
That was
it.
No, I worked for a flower shop delivering flowers. And occasionally I'd have to take them to these funeral homes. Mm. And you'd have to go in the back. And oftentimes they were not open. I mean, the back door was open. And you'd go in and it'd be quiet and dark.
Mm.
Oh, man, I hated that.
Mm. You need to watch the television series 6 Feet Under.
I have. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah, that's really good. Really good. All right, so hey, let's just take a minute and check in with everybody. Kevin, how are you doing this week? Anything exciting?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. We Opus has developed a minor leak. Bruce is looking at Opus from the Vashona. He sees some duct tape, now ornamentation inside the boat.
Oops.
It looks like a port light, a gasket is failing, and it's interesting how the water travels through a boat, you know, and it gets inside in the wrong way. But other than that, had a wonderful Christmas breakfast and dinner at here at home. And just really looking forward to a few sunny days coming up amidst the rainstorms to try to get out on the bike again, to do a little more riding around Vashon, which is always a pleasure.
You know, I have a friend that comes over from it's the Kirkland area, I guess it is. No, it's even further north than that. But anyway, he comes over on his bike occasionally. And I think, man, what an Iron Man. Because this island is really hilly.
If you come from the north, it's particularly brutal right off the bat, yeah.
Yeah, man, oh, man, just killer. How about you, Bruce? What's up with you this week?
Oh, just normal kind of Christmas craziness with the family over and grandkids. And I've got, if I got a minute, I've got this great story.
Yeah, please.
We have 2 6-year-old grandkids, and Haven, little girl, and Theodore, little boy. And they both just love the Frozen movies.
You know, yes,
Frozen,
of course.
Frozen 2. And, you know, and Elsa and Anna and all that sort of stuff. So Christmas morning, you know, 6:30 a.m., little feet climbing up the stairs, and it's Haven who's gotten an Elsa gown for Christmas.
Yes.
So she's got this long purple gown with this hood with, you know, fur fringe around it.
Oh my
she's
God.
Got a little tiara on, a little wand to wave, and just excited as could be about her Elsa content, her Elsa sort of costume.
Yeah.
So, you know, Theodore arrives, you know, an hour or so later, and just they're just ranting and raving about this Elsa costume. And she says, well, you know, I've got an Anna dress. And Theodore starts jumping up and down. So she runs across, they live right across the street from us. So she runs across the street and brings back the Anna dress.
Oh.
And Theodore puts this Anna dress on.
No.
And they are just jumping around the house and running around and just sort of like, they are in ecstasy. And it's just, you know, in these days when you have all this sort of stuff going on about transgender,
oh, yes,
LGBTQ and all this stuff, to see 2 little 6-year-olds just reveling in the fact that it didn't matter. Gender doesn't matter. They're excited about Christmas. They're excited about, you know, Elsa and Anna and Frozen. And it was just magical. And it
sort of just, that's great.
It just gives a lie to all that sort of crap we hear about, you know, poisoning kids' minds and taking books out of school and all that stuff. It was just joyful.
Absolutely.
So, sorry for the diversion. But
No, that's great. That's great. I have to tell you, that was at my brother's place, and his son has twin boys, and he had a daughter who was just like 6 months older than the twin boys. We're over there for a party, and they all come out naked, and they're the naked band. They've got instruments, and they're being the naked band. We were just rolling to the floor.
You didn't join in, did you?
No, I did not join in, but I did laugh pretty heartily, I have to tell you. They were pretty darn cute. They were about that, you know, 4 or 5 or 5 or 6, somewhere in there. Oh, boy, what a deal.
That's funny.
So how about you, Craig?
Oh, it's been one event after another. 3 solstice rituals, one of which I ran into Bruce at. The other one at the Sportsman's Club. We had a bonfire you could see from outer space. And then one with Michael Mead at Daig, which was quite the wonderful experience. And then dinners with friends throughout the week. But it started out the week since our last show, Tuesday night, the sing-along caroling with Bruce's, some of his relatives, I think, that showed up for the holiday sing-along at the theater. as well as people of all ages. We even had people come as far away as Maury Island.
All the way from Maury?
All the way from Maury. Wow. Yeah, I know. Wow. No, we had people from all over in all ages. Probably the big, it might have been the biggest group of people who wanted to sing Christmas carols that I've ever had in the 15 years that I've been leading.
Really?
It. Yeah.
How many
yeah.
folks do you think?
Well, I mean, you know, I think the theater was probably two-thirds to three-quarters full at the beginning of it. Yeah. And then I wore them down and people started leaving.
Well, I don't know if that's good or bad, Greg.
Well, there's lots of them were, you know, parents with little kids.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, of course. Well, how fun. Well, I had a board meeting that night, unfortunately, so I was not able to go.
Well, we missed your dulcet tones.
Yeah, I'm sure you would have. You would see why I am not a musician. You know?
But, well, you are a musician. Well, you're a great pianist.
I am. Well, a
piano player, so I don't get misunderstood.
Yeah. I think as pianist, like with peons. Somewhere. Oh, what am I doing?
Yeah, we got music to go along with that.
Going again here. Oh my gosh, the whole thing started again. So I had a very, very laid-back Christmas this year. We just had the three of us at home. You know, Molly came over and had a real nice dinner. My poor bride is having a little issue with her hip and having a heck of a time getting around. And so we had to scale it down this year. But it was great. And I got one of the coolest presents ever. Mm-hmm. You saw that, right? Mm-hmm. I got a clock that's about 8 inches in diameter that's an altimeter. I mean, it's a altimeter right like out of an airplane, but instead of going, you know, up to zero, I mean, it has 12 numbers on it instead of 10, which is really cool. I just was thrilled.
You're going to bring that to the hangar?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, cool.
Oh, yeah. Definitely going to be in the hangar for sure. Okay, so today is the 26th. It is our last show of the year. Here on The Voice of Vashon. It is the 360th day of 2023? Only 5 days left. Hard to believe. Today's Boxing Day, which is in Great Britain and some of the Commonwealth countries, particularly Australia, Canada, and New Zealand. This is the day that traditionally in which servants and tradespeople and the poor were presented with gifts. But sadly, by the 21st century, it's just become a day of associated with shopping and sporting events, wouldn't you know it?
People don't box? They don't hit each other in boxing gloves?
I don't think so.
First time I heard that term, I thought that's what it was.
I did, too. I thought, what the heck? So on this day in history, there's some kind of interesting things. The very first Spanish settlement of La Navidad was established in the New World by Christopher Columbus. That was in 1492. When he sailed the Ocean Blue. What is it now? Mole Saint Nicholas in Haiti? 1606, first known performance of Shakespeare's King Lear. It was in the court of King James in Whitehall in London. 1854. Oh, now here we got a couple of Native American events. 1854 was the Treaty of Medicine Creek, which was signed by the Nisqually, Puyallup, and Coast Salish peoples with Isaac Ingalls Stevens, who was the governor of Washington Territory, giving up 2.5 million acres of to preserve fishing and gathering rights. It was also in 1862, only, 8 years later, we had the largest mass execution in U.S. history of 38 Dakota men were executed via hanging in the aftermath of the U.S.-Dakota War in Mankato, Minnesota. So the two,
that was a real tragedy.
That was a tragedy.
Yeah.
And a little later here, 1951, The African Queen, directed by John Huston, was based on the 1935 novel of the same name, Humphrey Bogart and Katharine Hepburn. Fabulous movie that was released on this date. And in 2004 was the 9.3 magnitude earthquake, which causes the tsunami devastating Sri Lanka, India, Indonesia, Thailand, Malaysia, and the Maldives. Anyway, all of those in the Indian Ocean killed over 230,000 people.
That is huge.
Amazing. Isn't that something?
By the way, we felt the earthquake here.
Did you?
Yeah, at 7:15 in the morning. What was it, a couple days ago?
Sunday.
Sunday, yeah, a couple days ago. Yeah, it woke us up because it just resonated something that started making a noise.
Really?
Boom, a boom, 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 boom. And Lynette and I woke up and she goes, "That's our earthquake alarm." And then we got online and it was a 4.2 over by Paulsbo or
something. Yeah. Did you guys feel it? Neither one?
They're shaking. For those of you who can't see them, they're shaking their heads no.
Yes. But just like you say, Craig, the galloping Gertie, right? To get that harmonic resonance going.
Yeah.
It can amplify noises.
Yeah.
You know, back in, what would it have been? Early 60s, maybe, when in Yellowstone Park, half the mountain came down and formed a lake and covered the road and all of that. I was in southeastern Montana at the time, and it was in a trailer, a single-wide trailer.
Right.
And got up in the morning, and everybody's going, "Whoa, man, did you feel that? You know, boy, I thought the trailer was going to fall over." And I'm going, "What?" I slept right through it. Didn't even wiggle.
You have kind of a history of sleeping through.
I do.
Like the fire downtown here in Vashon.
Exactly. I slept through that. Man, that's a shame, you know.
It's a talent.
Exactly. So on the last show of the month, we've begun calling it the Truman Show, simply because we don't have a guest on this show. And so we leave it up to me to make stuff up, which that's really a long shot here, guys, for me to come up with it. But I thought, this is the last show of 2023. We should do a year in review. And so I came up with about 3 pages worth of stuff that a lot more than we certainly need. So maybe let's start with you, Kevin. How about some significant events for you for 2023? You got anything in mind?
I do. I kind of followed the chronological thoughts, and so I'll go that way also in mine.
Okay.
And the first, I'll start with the Washington State Legislature. There was tremendous progress made in our state legislature, soon to convene, by the way, another couple of weeks on January 8th. In Washington State in 2023, the legislature passed a SHIELD law, which protects the ability of women to receive reproductive health care in Washington State and women who travel to Washington State for reproductive health care. It was just one of many measures that were passed, over 129 measures to protect abortion access this year in 22 states in the District of Columbia.
Now, this was as a result of this Texas judge, right? Or is that different?
The overturning of Roe and subsequent other proceedings, which I think in Texas, some measure to punish women who were traveling in interstate in order to receive health care. There were definitely reactions across the entire enterprise. But if you look at the number of states that passed laws that support a women's right versus those who opposed a women's right, the states supporting women's rights, reproductive rights, was far and away larger. We hear about the negative connotations of restricting health care for women, but in large part, there's a lot of good news on that front as well. Hopefully, women who are listening live in a state which is supportive of their rights.
Right.
Also, a few other things. Guns. Washington State has an assault weapons ban now, passed in 2023. Mental health and trauma response. The state expanded funding for awareness of and staffing for the 988 crisis line. And I have a good friend who actually works on the crisis line and does good work every day. She actually said she was working over Christmas to answer phone calls on the crisis line and couldn't think of a better way to serve humanity by doing that. And wildlife, 2 items. Washington State expanded the orca buffer zone between boats and orca. And we now have a Washington State dinosaur.
Whoa.
Oh, what is that? What is that?
Sushiosaurus rex.
Sushiosaurus rex.
And what is Sushiosaurus rex?
Was it found on Susha Island?
apparently not to be confused with Susha Island, but we were talking about that same thing. Yeah, Sushiosaurus rex. I don't know a whole lot about the dinosaur. I need to do more research, but we have one.
It was actually discovered in the San Juan Islands, and that's why they gave it the Susha name.
So
it wasn't found on Susha. I believe it was found on San Juan Island. But yeah, it was found up in the San Juans.
But that makes perfect sense. And thank goodness we have a historian to provide the perspective we need.
Dirty dinosaur. Awesome. That's what it is. Susha, dirty in Spanish. So the dirty dinosaur.
Okay. Wow.
Yes.
Most of them are when you dig them up.
Wow, so that's true.
Where they get. Sorry. Right. I digress. Sorry.
The only problem with your digressions.
In our state legislature, so I was happy to look back on that.
Cool. How about you, Bruce? Or do you have more, Kevin?
Oh, well, I do, but we can feed them in as we go.
All right. All right, Bruce, how about you?
Well, I went through your list, Truman, and I noticed there were three things. They're separated in a bit, so let me pull them together. In January, Jacinda Ardern stepped down as Prime Minister of New Zealand. And she had sort of been Prime Minister throughout the COVID sort of pandemic and had done a magnificent job. But I think it burned her out a bit. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting that later in the year, so in the 2023 general election this fall, the National Party wins a plurality of seats. It's a parliamentary system, so no one party necessarily wins, but they put together coalitions. And in this election, and sort of a reaction to some of what many people saw overreaching during the pandemic with shut lockdowns and that kind of thing. Although New Zealand came out perhaps the best country in the world in terms of not killing off their population because of COVID policies. The reaction led to the introduction of this new national national party taking control of the parliament. Which had a very conservative agenda, particularly related to Maori people. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, in October, the Australian had a nationwide referendum about whether to create an Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander voice in the Constitution, to recognize Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people in the Constitution. And that failed. And what's significant to me about both of those in terms of what we're seeing in American politics is there's sort of a pushback to a certain extent against what some would call woke policies. And so both in Australia and New Zealand, which were leading the world in recognizing Aboriginal and Indigenous people's rights, both governments, by votes of the people, had taken a step back. And so it's instructive to me to look at what's happening in American politics and whether or not we're going to see that in the 2024 elections or whether that's just something that's happening in those two particular societies. But I've said this before. I think what's instructive when we watch Australian and New Zealand politics in relationship to American politics and Canadian politics is and South African politics, we're all British settler societies. We all come from a British background. Mm. We all have Westminster-style government structures that are similar to the British constitutional structure. And so there's a tie there, political tie there. And to see that sort of step back in Australia and New Zealand is very sort of worrying for me for what will happen in 2024 in the United States.
Yeah, Kevin.
Well, in fact, in Washington State, a group called Let's Go Washington, a conservative group, has now filed 6 initiative petitions. I haven't heard whether all of them have qualified to eventually be on the November ballot, but those initiatives are designed to do just what you said, Bruce, to roll back protections in climate, healthcare, mental health. I'd have to go back to the list, but it's pretty wide-ranging pushback against the policies that our Democratic legislature has advanced over the course of the last few sessions.
And also one of the things that struck me was along those same lines, this was in November, the Dutch general election elected this Geert Wilders of the Party for Freedom, and they're, again, a very conservative group as well. In fact, he's a big time against immigration into the Netherlands. So I find that kind of in that same vein that you were saying, Bruce. Yeah, Craig.
You know, Bruce, maybe you can comment on this. You reminded me of something. I've had the good fortune of being to Australia and New Zealand, and I was curious when I was down there, the power that the Maoris have in the legislature, whereas the virtual lack of representation of the Aboriginals in Australia. And I, like a typical American, I just dove in with both feet and started asking why. Why is that? And the answer that I typically got was that the Maoris were fierce fighters who asserted themselves throughout the entire time, whereas the Aborigine population did not so much. And it's resulted in the amount of, I don't know if respect's the right word, but respect in terms of representation. Does that make any sense to you, Bruce?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think, when I teach in Australia and New Zealand, I'd like to use sort of the United States, Australia, and New Zealand as sort of three case studies in sort of relationships between Indigenous and colonial peoples. Mm-hmm. In Australia, there were no treaties signed. So Aboriginal people had no rights whatsoever. Until the 1970s were Aboriginal people even citizens of Australia. And then the nature of Aboriginal society, there were over 600 nations, Aboriginal nations in Australia. And so they were really diverse and really relatively small groups. And so were relatively easily conquered militarily by the colonial British that came in. In the United States, you kind of have a middle case where fierce warfare, fierce struggles, and most of which were resolved by the colonial people winning, but signing treaties, and those treaties, although often ignored and sometimes not fulfilled, ultimately by the late 20th and early 21st century, become the basis for Native people reestablishing constitutional and legal rights. In New Zealand, the basic sort of constitutional document in New Zealand is a Treaty of Waitangi, which is a treaty between Maori people and the Crown, the government. And of course, when New Zealand becomes an independent nation, the Crown becomes the government of New Zealand. So there's one fundamental treaty that establishes relationships in New Zealand between Maori people and the government. And of course, in New Zealand, the Maori people were never defeated militarily, back to your fierce fighters kind of thing. And so what you have is three very distinct and different ways of dealing with colonial indigenous relationships. And they provide three models, in my mind at least, to look at how what stems from those different sort of approaches and those different histories. And you're right, in New Zealand, Maoris represent, they're almost 20% of the population. Wow. And they have representation. There's Maori seats in parliament. And New Zealand is a bilingual country. Hmm. Maori is an official language as well as English. And so you have a very different relationship.
Wow.
So a little bit of dive into a rabbit hole, but it's a great question.
Well, I wonder, Bruce, if because of the size of the population of the colonial versus the Maori, if that, was it made a difference? Go ahead.
Yeah, certainly. In New Zealand, New Zealand's not really settled by Europeans until the 1820s and
30s. Yeah.
So very late on, and in small numbers.
Right.
New Zealand's a small country. I mean, even now, there's 2.5 million people in New Zealand. There's 22, 23 million people in Australia. There's, what, 350, 40-some million people in the United States. So there's a degree of scale there that's very different.
Right. You know, the other thing that that I found interesting is in anthropology, when I was in college, we read about a study where there was a fellow in Australia who wanted to, he was trying to come up with a universal intelligence test. And what he came up with was a finger maze, where you would use your finger to go through this maze, and he would time people and see how long it would take them, you know. And so he came up with this kind of universal scale because language, you know, was inappropriate. Well, anyway, he wanted to do the Aboriginal people in Australia. And so he went there. Well, in order to go into the village and to be able to communicate with those folks, he had to be a member of that village. And the way he did that was he found a dock worker in Sydney or Melbourne, wherever, and he somehow became a blood brother to this guy. I don't know exactly how it all worked, but he had to memorize this guy's lineage. And so he went to this village, sat outside the village, and he started reciting this lineage. That's the way you, until he finally got to someone who was related to someone in that lineage. And so once he got that, they invited him into the village, and he was able to come in and attempt to study. And the very first person he sat down with a finger puzzle, they started and they came to the first intersection, and they said, "Which way do I go?" And he said, "Well, no, but you're supposed to figure this out for yourself." And he said, "Well, aren't you related to me?" And he said, "Well, yes." He said, "Well, then you have to tell me which way to go." And so, but the whole idea there is that it's a cooperative society, that they don't do anything without helping each other. So I find that interesting, that that might also have an effect on this relationship, this colonial relationship. Find that interesting. Okay, Craig, how about you? What do you got on your list? Oh, sorry.
Somebody? Well, I did have one quick follow-up question for Bruce, and I don't know, Bruce, this is maybe not a simple question to address. You know, there's, I think, a lot of forces in society that create the relationships between different elements of a society. And one you mentioned already with the Maori is fierce fighters. Mm-hmm. But there's also the notion of empathy and understanding and cooperation and getting along. Mm-hmm. In your study of looking at Australia, U.S. and New Zealand history with between the colonial presence and indigenous peoples, what weighs greater? Is it basically the ability to be successful in conflict? Is that what is established as the one of the primary drivers for the relationship in New Zealand, or does empathy play a role as well? I'm just curious what your thoughts might be.
Yeah, well, if you've read Jared Diamond's Guns, Germs, and Steel, you have a good sense of how European societies overwhelmed indigenous societies all over the world. And it wasn't with empathy.
Yeah, I was just going to say, empathy did not play a part in that.
Empathy comes later. And I think we see elements of empathy at work in what, you know, what the conservative right often calls wokeness, but trying to recognize, you know, the values of indigenous societies and of different cultures, that moves toward the empathy scale. But through most of the 18th and 19th century and into the late part of the 20th century, I don't think empathy plays a great part in relationships.
Yeah, no. I'll be quite interested to see how things shift as we go forward and whether empathy plays a bigger role.
Right. Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay, Craig.
Yeah, you know, as I was looking at your list and thinking about the last year, you know, there's been a lot of what I would call bad news, and I didn't want to have the entire show focus on bad news. So I was I had two topics. I don't know if we'll get to both of them. One had to do with the good things that have come already from artificial intelligence. Which, of course, people have real mixed emotions about, and I have great fears about. And the other is the great musicians and artists, musical artists that we lost over the last year, which I don't consider necessarily a bad thing in the sense that these are wonderful people that lived great lives and contributed wonderfully to our quality of life. And I just want to list off a few. There are literally 100 great musicians that died in the last year, but the ones that most people know, Tina Turner, Harry Belafonte, Tony Bennett, Jimmy Buffett, Sinead O'Connor, David Crosby, Burt Bacharach, Jeff Beck, wow. Otis Redding, Gordon Lightfoot, Ed Ames, Roger Whittaker, and of course, Laura Lynch, who died just a few days ago from the Dixie Chicks. All great musicians, singers, artists in their own right, whose memory will live on in their music. That's one of the great advantages to being a great singer, writer, musician, etc.
Right.
So, I didn't want to focus on the 600 plus mass shootings we've had in the United States
yeah.
in 2023. So I'll say no more than that. Regarding AI, I was reading about the advances that AI is making in health diagnosis.
I'm just going to say healthcare is one of the huge areas.
Well, one area that seems a little frightening, but I guess it's, you know, it has its upside, is the ability for AI to interpret brain activity into words. Literally read your mind for individuals who are rendered incapable of speaking. Their ability to communicate, because they may be paralyzed, they may not be able to speak, but they can actually communicate through the use of AI. The other is in education. I mean, of course, when it first came out, we thought every text and essay that was going to be written was going to be AI generated. That, you know, as a teacher, you'd see these wonderful things coming across your desk and you go, wow, you really made some leaps and bounds in your ability to put a coherent sentence together. But there's a whole area of education, the actual education, the tutoring that's kind of custom made that the student can interact with AI to supplement their school education and really help them out in their advancement. And of course, one of Kevin's primary areas of interest is the environment. There are just so many different areas where AI can be used. And one little one that I came across was the use of facial recognition to identify invasive fish that may be in rivers or lakes. Immediately, at a very, very early stage. And that's just a simple little example of the kinds of things that AI is capable of. So,
one of the things I just read about it that just blows me away. I've always been interested in Pompeii and Vesuvius and the whole thing. And what I just recently read was that they're taking these scrolls, which are carbonized. I mean, they've been fried, and they're using X-ray technology and AI to translate these scrolls without opening them.
They're doing that with Hittite, you know, and hieroglyphics, and it's just amazing.
It is incredible. I find that absolutely fascinating. Yeah, Kevin.
So, you know, I was startled by the early headlines, ChatGPT and everything was coming out about it would be the destruction of humanity, artificial intelligence. Craig, it sounds like you found a whole lot of humanity-saving elements in AI as opposed to humanity-destroying content.
They're out there.
Well, it's not all Terminator, the movie, you know.
Exactly. I mean,
Terminator is what gets everybody worried, you know.
Yeah, you mentioned healthcare, and, you know, I mean, we have family members ourselves who just have, you know, overcome, and we'll see how their longevity is and everything. But, you know, certain cancers that have just had been a death warrant in the past are no longer that way. Mm-hmm. And it's just really phenomenal that human ingenuity is able to move in that direction.
Between AI and what is it called, organic microchips that are made with actual physical neurons that can perform like 1,000 times more functions per split second than our current chips can do, you can run all of these combinations and permutations at the speed of light, literally at the speed of light, and come to resolution so much quicker. It's amazing what I think we're on the verge of. So I'm keeping my fingers crossed that AI doesn't go sideways.
Yeah, there you go. Well, mine, I've got a little bit more draconian thoughts here. And talking about global warming, in August of last year, or this year, our oceans reached an all-new high temperature of 20.96 C. That's 69.73 degrees Fahrenheit, which exceeded the previous record of 2016. And July is also the hottest month on record for globally averaged air temperatures. By a considerable margin, it's like 32.5 degrees Fahrenheit. I mean, that is huge, huge. In addition to that, yeah, go ahead, Kevin.
Well, I did want to mention some climate news as well, but were you going to move to a different topic?
Or? No, I was just going to talk about the November, the average temperature was exceeded the 2 degrees above the pre-industrial age average, 2 degrees, which is, that's huge.
And the entire year now is predicted to be the hottest year, is it not, Kevin?
Yeah.
And I just saw a headline this morning that the concern about whether climate change is moving faster than scientists were predicting, and the jury's out, of course. But taking action to address those is, again, something fortunate to be here in Washington State. The Climate Commitment Act, which, oh, by the way, one of those initiatives I mentioned is likely to be on the ballot this November, could reduce the Climate Commitment Act. This is where polluters now must pay for the carbon pollution that they emit. But there are literally billions of dollars of those pollution fees that we can now apply to reducing the impacts of emissions, like home weatherization, shifting medium and heavy duty trucks to electric. There's a bill to this session to try to move school buses to electric. Also preserving forests to sequester carbon. And so many investments. I read the BBC. Now, this is not a U.S. Organization. BBC, in their list of the most impressive gains on addressing the climate, have cited the Inflation Reduction Act.
Really?
Which, of course, passed now a couple years ago. And there were 10 items, but the Inflation Reduction Act was number one. And here in Washington, if we can get Representative Rammel's Navigator Bill passed, it means you'll have an easy one-shop stop for the available rebates and tax breaks for moving your home to a less carbon-emitting item. And buildings are the number two and fastest growing source of carbon emissions. And so hurrah to Seattle City Council, who unanimously passed just a month or so ago, a building performance standards, which basically incentivizes building owners in Seattle to improve their existing building efficiency and reduce carbon pollution. It's a measure that may move across the state as we address buildings. Fairly hard to decarbonize sector right now.
So, and Kevin, what about the what about the legislation? I think it had to do with packaging, where the people doing the packaging have got to be responsible for recycling of that packaging. Is
the
that
Wrap
part
Act,
of it?
Yes.
What's it called?
Yeah,
now?
That's the Wrap Act, W-R-A-P.
Right.
And appropriately named, it's probably an acronym. it'll be up again in this session. It did not pass last time. I think there was something. Just about traffic congestion and, trying to move legislation through that they didn't do enough planning to get that one through, but there might be other issues. Another bill that will be heard again in this session is a bill introduced by Puget Sound Energy, which is actually to incentivize their customers to shift away from gas to electric. And so you may cherish your gas stove, but, maybe that gas furnace or that gas water heater can be replaced with a heat pump, which if you get a heat pump for your air heating, it can also cool you in the summer because it's an air conditioner also. And of course, they're more efficient. They protect people from these potential surges in fossil fuel costs. So state of Washington is really moving forward in a lot of fronts there.
Just real quickly, I always, people always ask me, oh, you mean I have to get rid of my my stovetop or whatnot. The answer, of course, is not yet. But the other answer is, well, wait a minute, your stovetop's propane, and propane is not, at least yet, has been placed on that list of, problems.
It turns out propane has a lower global warming potential than natural gas, which is amazingly high. Natural gas is methane primarily, and it is much more damaging to the climate in terms of warming than CO2, which is the typical thing we hear measured. And with the advancement in fracking and the release of methane through fracking, I'm not surprised to hear that climate change is moving faster than the scientists were concerned, because it's a huge global warming potential gas. The only good news there is it doesn't persist as long in the atmosphere as carbon dioxide, but nonetheless, it's there now.
You know, I, as you well know, I grew up until I think I was 11 years old down in West Texas, and one of the things that was really prominent in those days was the gas flares. And throughout every night, you would see all across the countryside these brilliant burning, because they burn 24 hours a day, but they were burning off this gas that was excess gas. And you don't see that almost never now in throughout the West Texas Permian Basin area.
Yeah, this law would not only help move customers to a different energy source, but it would also, I think, provide funding for sealing off leaks in that extensive natural gas system that we have underground that not only leaks can help hurt the climate, but of course, we had explosions in the past which have hurt people. So a lot of fairly good opportunity there in this legislative session coming up.
Yeah, and several times this year, you've seen houses get completely destroyed by blowing up. I mean, there have been, gosh, I don't know, half a dozen of them around the country. So I had on here the Hawaiian wildfires. That was in August. 17,000 acres were burned and at least 100 people were killed. It was still 4 missing. I just read recently that there was some perhaps new theory about that? Has anybody read about that? No. I think it primarily had to do with winds, but that were whipping it up. But
I know there was a big controversy about whether or not the electrical grid should have been turned off. But then the other side of that coin is that you need the electrical grid for the
water
pumps
and
whatnot. So there was it wasn't a simple matter.
Okay, another big thing, there's a little bit lighter note. In July, the films Barbie and Oppenheimer came out. And believe it or not, I actually saw both of them this year. Both of them were unbelievably good. Did you guys see them?
Yes, I saw them.
You see them both? How about you,
no,
Bruce, Kevin? No. Well, I had not seen Barbie. I kind of was like, oh, you got to be kidding. That is a great movie.
You know, it's an interesting movie, to say the least. And there has been probably more written about that movie than almost any movie I've seen in the last several years.
Yeah.
One of the things that I found fascinating is I've run into a few people who didn't really follow the culture of how Barbie went from being very acceptable and everybody wanted a Barbie to being the Antichrist, because Barbie set the role, model for young girls that was impossible to meet, and various other, ethical and cultural issues that it fostered. And if you didn't pick up on that, if you never understood that Barbie fell on hard times, you would not understand the movie.
Exactly.
So.
Anyway, yeah, I recommend it, guys. Go out and see it. Believe it or not, it really is it's significant, I would say. Wouldn't you say? Okay, let's see. What else have I got? Oh, yeah, here's one. In September, the UAW, United Auto Workers, on strike against the 3 largest American automakers, Ford, General Motors, and Stellantis. So are we seeing a resurgence of unions And I'm wondering if that's related in any way to some of the other, with the rise of authoritarian aspects, if that's going to be a counter to that, Kevin.
I say I hope that we are. You know, I worked for 35 years for the Boeing Company, much of that not as a union member. But then as circumstances changed, I eventually did join the union. And I look back at like what I had missed for 25 or so years of the support that a union provides to a labor force. Yeah. And of course, Boeing had the, I think, still probably the largest white collar strike in the nation's history when the SPIA went out on strike. The I think that we think about the equity imbalance, the financial imbalance in the country, the creation of hundreds of millions of people who are just really not receiving the benefits. What our society can produce for them. And the idea that the labor movements have shown a resurgence, I think, is a good sign for the middle class, which is the majority of us.
Yeah, you know, I was with two different airlines, actually three different airlines, but two of them were non-union and one was union. And it was very interesting. If you look at the regulations, the FAA regulations that that govern how we operate, a very large portion of that regulation was come up with by unions, labor unions, because of safety. And it's amazing the difference between the way those two operate. Yeah, Craig.
Yeah, I think it's really important. People forget or never learned what unions brought to American culture in terms of the things that we now accept and take for granted that didn't exist. I mean, the child labor.
40-hour work week.
Yeah, 40-hour work week, the child labor issues, you know, all sorts of things. And you read that, you know, those ridiculous resumes there, or those intros of us at the beginning. Mm-hmm. And you always put on there the thing about my being a tow truck driver. And mm-hmm. I was a Teamster. I was a member of the Teamsters Union. But I was also Pinkerton, who do not have a great reputation when it comes to dealing with the unions. The Pinkertons were the strike
union
breakers.
Busters, and, yeah,
exactly. Although that wasn't the Pinkerton group that I belonged to back in the 60s or 70s. So.
Kevin.
Well, Truman, you mentioned that the union airlines you work for, that largely the union was responsible for some of the safety regulations mm-hmm. of the FAA. You know, it's surprising to me that people are surprised by the idea that when you ask people who work about their work and how to make it better and more efficient, more effective, that's the crowd you want to talk to, because they know how to make things better and more effective. But somehow, I mean, it was a stint in management, and I was a little surprised how managers seem to think that they eventually have it all figured out, and that they really don't need to talk to those people out on the floor. But that when you get to that point, you know you're going the wrong direction. You need to talk to the people who make up the workforce. They know how to do the work, and they know how to make it better. So I'm really happy to see the union movement gaining some traction here.
One of the things that I always said was if management is willing to work with the union, then it's a very effective organization, a very effective relationship. If they choose to take it as an adversarial relationship, it goes the opposite direction, and it is extremely damaging to the company and to the employees. And so it really it's like bipartisan government. It takes an effort on both sides to work together to make the thing work.
Oh, and it becomes extremely adversary. I had the fortune or misfortune of being the attorney who represented one of the colleges. So I represented, management in a unfair labor practice, the very first unfair labor practice in that particular work setting. I haven't run into that kind of adversary relationship, even in the practice of criminal defense. So it gets rugged.
It gets ugly. Yes, yeah. It does. Very much so. Okay. Let's see. I got one more item here. Oh, sorry, Kevin.
No, I did want to sneak in a
Oh, yeah.
PSA and
Yeah,
give Bruce
please.
an
Please.
opportunity. Bruce, I think you've got a museum event coming up on a first Friday here pretty shortly, don't you?
Yeah, we do. Thanks. This Friday, not this coming Friday, the next Friday, January 5th, museum will be closing for 6 months. As we install a basically what it isn't going to be a brand new museum, a whole new way of looking at and understanding Vashon's history. So, Natural Wonder, which has been a collaboration between the Heritage Museum and the Vashon Nature Center, exhibit, which went up right at the beginning of COVID and sort of has been going on, for 2 years, over 2 years now, will be closing. And we'll be incorporating a lot of that into the new exhibit, and a lot of work we've been doing with Puyallup tribe and with other groups on the island. So it's going to be an interesting sort of look at Vashon from a different perspective. And so January 5th, first Friday, there'll be a museum, big party at the museum to close the museum. And then on July 5th, we'll open the new museum with an appropriate celebration. So thanks for that, Kevin.
And Bruce, you're going to be gone for the first. How long are you gone?
I've gone for about, I'll be back in mid-March. I'll leave January 10th and come back in mid-March. So
Mid-March, so.
half months. So
So hopefully most of that planning's already been done that you can put your stamp on, I would
oh
assume.
yeah, we're working through the exhibit. The text for the exhibit to have that almost complete at this point, and lots of interactives. If I can put in a pitch, one of the exciting things is going to be a large digital interactive map of Vashon. We're working with Bruce Morser, who did the
Yes.
installation at Center, if you've ever seen that. And Bruce has is developing five base maps for us to take us through five sort of time periods of Vashon history. And then each of those base maps, you're going to be able to look, say, Town of Burton. You can click on the Town of Burton, and you'll see Burton at each of these different time
Oh,
periods,
wow.
photographs, descriptions, that kind of stuff. It's going to be pretty spectacular. Yeah, Craig.
I'm not sure how we're going to carry on while you're gone.
I was thinking that.
But
Probably
my
very
understanding is you
easily, but.
might be able to tune in and join us on occasion, especially from Australia. So I hope that's the case.
I will.
Yeah, we'd let we
Yeah,
want we want.
it's 11 o'clock in the morning here on Tuesday is what 5 o'clock in the morning on Wednesday in Australia. So I'll get myself up early for this. In New Zealand, it's only a 3 hour time difference. So 11 o'clock on Tuesday is what 8 o'clock in the morning on a Wednesday, which is time I'm getting ready to head out for field trips and classes and that kind of stuff. So probably be able to be with you most of the time in Australia and some of the time in New Zealand,
Well, that'd be great.
but it'll also be nice to give you guys a break from.
Oh no. Listen, when you're gone, we'd flounder around here trying to figure out
Yeah,
what the heck's going on.
We talk about you.
We do talk about you. That's right.
Exactly.
And it's
I
not
know.
all good, Bruce. It's
I
not all
listened to the
good.
recordings.
Well, I had one more little quick thing that I was, it's not quick, it's huge, that I want to talk about, and that was Finland joining NATO. And just wondering what you guys think about NATO expanding, Kevin.
I saw a headline today that Turkey is setting the stage for their final vote on admission of Sweden as well.
Yeah, that is just amazing to me.
Well, it's huge because there's so much border there on Russia.
Exactly. Well, folks, we're just about out of time, so I need to take this opportunity to say thank you very much for tuning in, and we do wish you a very happy new year. And look forward to 2024 when the Brown Briefly will be coming back stronger than ever. Do you have anything about next week, Craig? You got something for that?
No, I don't.
Okay. Well, it'll be a mystery. It's
will
a
be a
mystery.
Surprise. Tune
I do
in.
know we have Cher Nelson the following week, and then we have Dal Constantine the following week after that.
Fantastic. So anyway, for Kevin, Craig, Bruce, and myself, Truman O'Brien, been great being with you today, and we'll see you next week.